Welcome to this second session on contemporary voices in liberation theology. Today we're talking about womanist theology. I'm Annie Powell from Brooklyn, New York, student at Union Theological Seminary in the doctoral program in systematic theology, and my special focus is womanist theology. So today our topic is Womanist Theological Reflection, African American Women's Voices. And I'd like to announce from the beginning that this article is on reserve here. The Womanist Theology article is on reserve with Margaret Lovejoy. She would have made copies in advance but didn't know how many people would be in the session, so she said if you wanted a copy of the article on Women's Theology by Dolores Williams to take home with you and look at another time, you could do that. Or if you'd like to know some books in which the article is contained, I could tell you that afterwards. Also, somebody asked me about some beginners readers for feminist theology from yesterday, and if you're interested, if you'll see me after the session, I'll be happy to give you some titles. Some folk have already asked me the connection between feminist theology and womanist theology, and I will answer that. However, I want to begin today with why womanist theology is necessary. And in order to answer this question, I need to talk a little bit about the emergence of it. So I start by saying the role that black theology played in the emergence of womanist theology, and note some of the similarities and differences between those two, and then move on to the relationship between feminist and womanist theology. I am using the story of a womanist theologian rather named Kelly Delane Brown Douglas because her story is my story and the story of many other African American women doing theology. Brown Douglas notes in an article in James Cone's book, Black Theology, A Documentary History, that it was Cone's book, A Black Theology of Liberation, which was published in the 1970s, that really introduced her to theological reflection, and I make the same claim. She says, when she read this book, she was struggling trying to understand the connection between her blackness and the Christian faith. She wanted to know if the God of Jesus Christ was really for or against black liberation. And Cone's book answered that question for her, primarily because Cone argued that the Christian God was on the side of the oppressed as they fought for justice. And this meant that in a white racist society, that is the United States, that God and Christ were black. Now, of course, Cone was speaking symbolically in one perspective, but he's speaking of of Jesus historically as a human being, he was speaking literally and symbolically. So Brown Douglas says that this perspective empowered her to fight against white racism with a firm and determined resolve. The image of a black God gave me a new sense of pride in my own blackness, she says. Black theology, let it be known that God did speak through the black community, that the black story of suffering and struggle was God's story. Black theology opened the door for black people to further explore the richness of their own experience in their efforts to understand the meaning of God's presence in human history. However, Brown Douglas notes, and I make the same claim again, that the emergence of feminist theology with its penetrating critique of patriarchy, I explained that term yesterday, but I did put it on the board today again for people who might not have been here on yesterday. When I say patriarchy, I'm talking about male-centered, male-dominated, paternalistic attitude. For example, when the patriarchs or a certain ruling class of white men in our society set themselves up as the protectors of humanity and adopt a father knows best attitude where they know what's best for everybody. And so for people who are not familiar with the term, hopefully that will explain it. But that's what feminist theology did. It just cut right in, zeroed in on patriarchy and called it what it was. So when Brown Douglas became acquainted with the feminist struggle, then she was able to name the sexist oppression that she was experiencing from her male colleagues in the black community. She knew that it was something, but she didn't know what to name it. So in this way, it helped her to become painfully aware that sexism was not just a white thing, because that's what black men used to claim. You know, when feminist theology first emerged, oh, that's just the white woman's thing. They ain't got nothing to do with black women, and so forth and so on. But we knew what we were feeling. And so the feminist theology helped us to be able to name that pain that we were feeling when our black brothers excluded us and denied us our full humanity. So Brown Douglas was acutely aware that sexism pervaded the black church and the community. And so was Jacqueline Grant, who was studying under Cone in the 1970s when he was doing this writing. So in his class, she challenged him about the sexism in the church. And so when he published his first volume of Black Theology, A Documentary History, from 1969, I think it is, to 1979, then Jacqueline Grant was able to include her article in this volume. And so it's entitled Black Theology and the Black Woman. And she pointed out that although black theologians claim to write from the vantage point of the total black experience, black women were invisible in black theology. As black female theologians began to recognize the inadequateness of black theology in relation to their struggle, they endeavored to develop a more inclusive theological perspective, and they soon gave voice to the womanist perspective. So the role of black theology in the emergence of womanist theology is twofold. First, by linking God to the black experience, black theology gave black women access to systematic theological reflection. And second, by ignoring black women's experience, black theology forced black women to develop their own theological perspective. So when we talk about the role of feminist theology in the emergence of womanist theology, I refer to that article that I mentioned in the beginning, Womanist Theology, which is by Dolores Williams. She is now teaching at Union, where I'm studying, and she often speaks of her experience in the feminist movement before the womanist movement emerged. And she said that in an article called The Color of Feminism, or Speaking the Black Woman's Tongue, Williams talks about her experience with Christian women. A group of Christian women invited her to come to the church and speak about feminist theology because they had heard about it and they wanted to know more about it. So she goes in and did something like I was doing yesterday, talked about feminist theory and tries to explain what the movement is about and so forth and so on. And then she divides the women into two groups, Group A and Group B, and tells them to talk about it and then report back to the larger group. So when they reported back, one woman said, and I'm going to quote her now, "Honey, I want to say something about this feminism. This all reminds me of the day I went into a fancy dress shop downtown and saw a real pretty dress. The colors in the dress blended right. The design was modern and fashionable. The buttons in front looked real pretty with the material. Everything about the dress looked just right. There was only one problem. The dress was size 5 and I wear size 20. I can sew real good, but I knew there was no way for me to alter that dress and still have the same thing. There just wasn't enough material in that dress to make it fit me. Now that's my point, honey. This feminism looks real pretty, but there just ain't enough in it to fit me. And what I'm wondering is, if you black feminists try to make feminism fit me, will you have the same thing?" Women from the other group brought up the race question and asked Williams if, as a black feminist, she were advancing white supremacy, extending white women's privilege rather than fighting for the total black liberation. And remember that the civil rights movement is going on, or, you know, gave was happening alongside the development of the feminist perspective. So black women have to make a choice. Now, are you going to be part of the civil rights movement and fight for the end of racial segregation, or are you going to join the feminist movement at this point in your life and fight against sexism? So if you try to join the feminist movement, it can seem as though you are against your black brothers because you got the sex issue going with them, and so you just feel all divided and you don't know what to do with yourself. And so this is just one example of the kind of contradictions that gave birth to womanist theology. Now, I want to begin by reading this definition of womanist theology that is in Williams' book called Sisters in the Wilderness. This is her new book, The Challenge of Womanist God Talk. The term womanist was coined by black female Pulitzer Prize winner Alice Walker. She gives the following definition of a womanist. The term is derived from womanish, which is the opposite of girlish, for example, frivolous, irresponsible, not serious, the way black women have been depicted in the past. A womanist is a black feminist or a feminist of color, and this comes from the black folk expression of mothers to female children. You are acting womanish, i.e. like a woman, usually referring to outrageous, audacious, courageous, or willful behavior, wanting to know more and in greater depth than is considered good for one, interested in grown-up doings, acting grown-up, being grown-up, interchangeable with another black folk expression, you trying to be grown, responsible, in charge, serious. Also, a woman who loves other women, sexually and or non-sexually, appreciates women's culture, women's emotional flexibility, values tears as natural counterbalance of laughter, and women's strength, sometimes loves individual men, sexually and or non-sexually, committed to the survival and wholeness of entire people, male and female, not a separatist, except periodically for help. And Williams begins her dialogue on womanist theology with a mother-daughter. Williams begins her article on womanist theology with the mother-daughter dialogue that Alice Walker used in her book called In Search of Our Mother's Gardens, Womanist Prose. And the dialogue goes like this. Mama, why are we brown, pink, and yellow, and our cousins are white, beige, and black? And the mother says, well, you know the color race is just like a flower garden, with every color flower represented. The daughter says, Mama, I'm walking to Canada, and I'm taking you and a bunch of other slaves with me. Mother responds, wouldn't be the first time. A womanist also loves food and roundness, loves struggle, loves the folk, loves herself regardless. Womanist is to feminist as lavender is to purple. So that's the definition that we use when we are speaking of womanist theology. And as you can hear from that mother-daughter dialogue, this young child is beginning to see individuals with distinct differences. The mother uses the flower garden imagery to explain the differences, and then the daughter talks about her plan of walking to Canada because she knows that in Canada there is no slavery. That's why she's going to Canada. But she has the quality of concern at this young age to say, I'm taking you with me, Mama, and I'm taking another bunch of slaves with me, too, because she sees at this young and tender age that the people are hurting and need to be delivered. So she volunteers to be part of this movement to get them out of the pain into a place of freedom. The daughter, in other words, is thinking grown-up thoughts, too grown for her years. She has a liberation mindset already, not concerned for herself alone, but inclusive of the entire community. She's acting womanish. Now, this is not unique in the African-American community. Most young girls act womanish. In, you know, whether it's a white girl, black girl, or from any other race. But we named it. My mother used to tell me, you acting womanish when I got too grown. You know, and I've told my daughters that. So we needed something, you know, all the time. I need to say that we don't, black people in America don't have our own language because we weren't allowed to keep our languages that we had when we came from Africa here. And so we speak English, but that's not our native tongue. We have black culture. So we coin our terms in our black culture, and they mean something to us. But when we hear the European terms, you know, they don't have a special meaning for us. And so womanist theologians thought it was especially important to have a term that black women could relate to and understand. And so they adopted this term, womanish, because of all of those meanings that I have already explained to you. But in order now for you to really understand the need for a womanist theology, one must know something of her history. So I put the word up here, history, that's the male perspective. We had that all the time. Now we need her story, and if we put them two together, we'll have our story, you know? But right now, it's such a one-sided thing that we want to add another dimension to make it more holistic. And Katie Cannon, who is a womanist ethicist, shared with me how when she studied at Union Theological Seminary, she was doing her dissertation, and she was working with another ethicist on her dissertation committee, explaining to him how black women were oppressed, and he said, black women are not oppressed. And so she felt the need in her dissertation to show how black women were oppressed so that he and other people, including the African-American community could know about the oppression of black women. So she includes a section in her book called Black Woman as Ethicist, just on the history or herstory of black women from slavery up until the 1980s when she was writing. And she says, black women were considered chattel, mere property. Their lives were estimated in terms of money, property, and capital assets. They were commodities to be bought and sold, traded for money, land, or other objects. At the auction block, black women were stripped naked, exposed to the public, dehumanized with pokes, probes, and rude examinations. A black woman's monetary value was calculated by her capacity to breed. And Cannon uses the term breed south, because that's how we were valued. The more children you could have, the more valuable you became. The other term is work ox. The more work you could do, then the more valuable you were. And black women's work has never been divided the way in which other women's work was. You know, other women were restricted from doing certain things. Black women had to do everything that the black man did during the time of slavery. Pregnant women were required to produce the same amount of work as others. If they failed, they were beaten. Instead of showing compassion to nursing slave mothers whose breasts were throbbing and aching because they were filled with milk, slave owners beat them, sometimes causing the milk and the blood to flow together. The only time a black woman's gender mattered was when she was going to be used for sexual exploitations. The other times, she did the same work as men. And after slavery, black women's oppression continued in every sphere of life. So in other words, Cannon shows clearly the differences in the experience of white women and black women, and also how black women were oppressed by white women. As white women's experience is important for critiquing classical and other theologies, then black women's experience becomes extremely important in critiquing feminist theology. Because as long as there's somebody there critiquing, somebody reminding you that you are doing something to hurt you, then you have to make a choice as to whether or not you are going to repent and interact with them on a different level. And so womanists claim that neither black theology done by black men nor feminist theology done by white women speaks for black women, especially when you start from experience, because white women's experience equals black women's experience only up to a point. And then there's nothing that you can tell me about what it means to be a black woman in this society, because you have not experienced the racism, the sexism, the classism, and the surrogacy that I have experienced. So if you want to know what that is like, you have to listen to my voice and hear about my pain and enter into my pain, so that you can have a sense of what it's like and then be in solidarity with me to try to end that kind of pain. And so that's why it was important for black women to establish womanist theology, so that we would have a voice to give vent to our own experience with God in this world, especially through our struggle. So according to Williams, womanist theology must be informed by at least four elements. And the first one is a multi-dialogical intent. That means there are many voices. We want to be in conversation, not just with ourselves, our own black women, but with feminists and with other women of color all over the world. Because when we read other women's stories, somewhere in there we find our own story. And so we will not divorce ourselves from other women. We want to be in community with them. So that's why Walker says that womanist theology is to feminist theology as lavender is to purple. There is that connection, and we, as womanists and feminists, intend to make that connection stronger. But We recognize that there are also differences in terms of our experience historically and also now. So there are differences in our cultures and so forth, but we want to be able to appreciate those differences and not make it necessary for everybody to become like us, you know. So we have to have a dialogue with other communities. And that multi-dialogical intent is not just for women only. Is to be in dialogue with men also, especially men who are trying to work with us and support us, but also men who are not, because there's still that confrontational element that is so biblically based, because the Bible says if somebody is sinning, that you ought to tell them that they're doing wrong. And so that's what feminist and womanist theology intends to do, to tell you what you're doing wrong that hurts me and denies my full humanity. Number two is the liturgical intent, because we really need to take a look at the liturgy in the Black church in particular, but in most churches. And so this allows us a place, you know, to start looking at some of the liturgical forms and making them more inclusive, so that women are portrayed as receptacles of God's spirit as well as men. The other one is, this number three, is a didactic intent, which is a teaching element. That means that we understand we've always been teachers. That's one of the few jobs that Black women could get in this country was a teaching job. We don't mind that. Teaching is good. Jesus was a teacher. But we understand that we have to use this teaching in order to inform, to do consciousness raising, and help our women and men to understand that as long as we continue to oppress one another, we can never be liberated. Number four is a commitment to both to reason and to the validity of female imagery and metaphorical language in the construction of theological statements. We don't have one single theological statement that uses imagery that even makes it appear that females are on this earth. And so we want to change that. We want the statements to be more inclusive and to use female imagery. There's female imagery in the Bible, lots of it. You know, Jesus talks about the hen gathering her brood, and Moses talks about God giving birth to a nation and so forth. So we want to use that kind of imagery that would be inclusive of both males and females, because birthing is not something that's done by women alone. Men participate in that process, and men give birth to ideas and, you know, visions and so forth and so on. So, but we, you know, so we just want to make it more inclusive. And so, anyway, to move on rapidly, what time is it, somebody?
11
o'clock. How long do I have? To 11:30? Okay, thank you. The Bible plays a major role in womanist theology. However, womanists are very selective in their use of scripture. Jesus is the central figure for womanists. Like other Black women before them, womanists believe that Jesus understands their suffering and stands in solidarity with them during their worst pain. Womanists also believe in the power of the Spirit. In the Black church, women and men often judge the effectiveness of the worship service not on the scholarly content of the sermon, but not on the ritual either, or any orderly process, but on the effectiveness of the Spirit. We say if the Spirit was high, then the service was good. So that means to us, if the Spirit is high, then the Spirit is actively and obviously present, ministering to the needs of the people. So if you see me start acting wild and stuff, you know, it's the Spirit. And in concluding this part of my discussion, I want to end by saying I agree wholeheartedly with Brown Douglas, who argues that although the meaning of womanist originated with Walker, it goes beyond her words today. It points to the richness and complexity of being black and female in a society that tends to devalue both blackness and womanhood. Womanist symbolizes black women's resistance to their multidimensional oppression as well as their self-affirmation and determination to survive with dehumanizing social historical conditions. The use of the term womanist in religious and theological scholarship signals understandings of the Bible, of various church communities, and of God that have emerged from social historical context of black women struggling to survive and be free. Praise God. So this is an overview so that you can have better understanding of what womanist means, and I just want to now give us an opportunity to talk about this a little bit. So can we have a little dialogue here, and then if we have enough time left, I have an exercise in which we can participate, just one of reading the scriptures. I wrote this little skit out, so if we don't have time to do it here, you can still keep it, and maybe we'll do it at another time. Any questions? Or comments? It's going, a set going both ways.
Well, if I could share something, I was married to a black man for 23 years and lived in a black community for all that time. And so I have some sense of being a minority within a minority. But I know with my daughter, you know, we're very close. But there is a point at which I don't, after all these experiences, comprehend what she's feeling. And I can never experience what she's experiencing.
Yeah. That's very true. That's very true.
Verlon?
Is womanist theology, or how does that lend itself to institutional church stuff? I mean, is womanist theology interested in changing the institutions, starting new institutions? Does institutions matter in womanist?
A great deal. Especially for persons like Kelly Brown Douglas and Jacqueline Grant and myself and many other women, because we are what we call church-based theologians, which means that we are not only working in theology, but we are ordained ministers in the AME church. And so we work with the women in the churches in whatever ways we can. Sometimes if you use the term womanist theology, men are turned off from the term, just as they are with the term feminist theology, because it represents the female and because we have been socialized to devalue anything that's connected with the female. And so I had one man, matter of fact, he was my pastor, tell me that you'd have to call it something else before you could talk about it here. And to me, that's saying that you don't even see that you are trying to name my reality. You're trying to name it. You've been doing all of the defining who I am for all of these years. And now when I finally understand that I do have the right to name myself, and I claim that right, you're going to tell me that I can't have the name that I give myself. You know? So we find other ways to do it. Subtle ways. In Bible study groups, in just whatever we are doing, we embody womanist, a womanist perspective. And so it becomes part of who we are and part of our interacting with anybody. So in that way, we are able to speak to women. And then we do special women's conferences. in the AME church in particular, we have a women in ministry component now that's also a legitimate part of the church structure. Has a bishop over us and everything. A male bishop, of course, because we don't have any female bishops. But nevertheless, he is a man who supports women's rights, and he works with us and helps us in organizing and planning and carrying out these conferences so that we can bring large groups of women together at one time and talk about the issues. And we invite the men to come and participate so that they can be part of it, because that is what we want. So in that sense, we are able to address, are able to take it in the church. But as a movement, it is not. It is not. And for other institutions, it's the same thing. See, the thing is, you don't have to be in theology or in order to be feminist or womanist. You can be working in any discipline and still use a feminist or womanist perspective to do your work, which means that you would always have that analysis there, that critical analysis of race, class, sex, you know, and other forms of oppression that come up. So when you're doing your work in any discipline, that's what the didactic intent means for me in womanist theology. It means that I want to work in cooperation with women and men who are in other disciplines, and especially church history, biblical studies, and black theology. Because we don't know church history. We don't know the canonization of the scriptures. If we knew something about the process, you know, knew more about the process in both church history and the canonization of the Bible and other things, then we wouldn't take all of the creeds as written in stone, so to speak, and think that they were not subject to anybody else's interpretation except those ruling class religious men who wrote them. So you have to work together across. It has to be across or an interdisciplinary activity, not just womanists in the theological field trying to do the work by themselves. Anyone else have a question?
Did you primarily start on the East Coast? Do you have the groups West Coast growing? How would you see that? The movement, let's say, the woman's movement, would you say that that's mostly in one area?
No, I couldn't say that. I would say that in New York, there were women like Jacqueline Grant who were studying with Cone, who had a chance to publish articles on women's theology. But see, the thing that I'm trying to emphasize is that African-American women have always been involved in the feminist movement on some level. Whether they were given the visibility that they deserved or not. So we've always been part of the struggle, and there are still some black women, like Bell Hooks, for example, who remain part of the feminist movement because she likes the feminist movement, and that's fine. We need that. When womanist theology emerged, then many of the women who were black women who were involved in the feminist movement from around the country began to identify with the womanist movement. So that's why I can't say that it was on the East Coast or the West Coast, but womanist theology did start to take shape in some written form on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. Okay, yes.
Do black Muslim women identify with the womanist movement?
Some of them do. Some of them do. Now, whether or not, see, this is where it gets really tricky, because Christianity itself is so exclusive. So that's where it gets really tricky. For me, I welcome Islamic women to come into the movement, and any other person who feels that this is a perspective that he or she can adopt and be comfortable with. I would welcome that. I think that's what makes the movement richer. I don't think that anyone can claim a theology just because it emerged from your community. You know, that's just like feminist theology emerged from a middle and upper class white women's perspective. But that was just the emergence of it. If it had stayed that way, then it would have been very exclusive. But it didn't. You know, you when you first come out, you are responding to something that's hurting you. It's like someone with blinders on. All you can see is your pain. Because it's hurting so badly, you can't look around you and see the other pain. You're just feeling yours. And so you respond to that. And that's what those women did. Those feelings are valid. So the movement broadened and tried to embrace all of the women of color and men who wanted to be part of the movement, people from third world countries and so forth, you know. So it didn't stay that exclusive movement that it began. And it's the same thing from my perspective for the womanist movement. Just because it emerged as black women's voices, there are lots of people who come up to me and tell me, white women, who say, yeah, I'm a womanist. And I say, okay. If you feel this is where you can fit in and be comfortable, and then they start telling me about their experience of poverty, or like this woman is talking about her experience of being married to a black man, that by itself has been a sin, you know, in this society for a long, long time. And if anybody thinks that she hasn't suffered in many ways that black women suffer just for being married to that man, we got another thing coming. Because that is the reality, and I know that. And, you know, most of you know it too. So, gays and lesbians have also told me, especially lesbian women, usually white women, say that they feel that they can work here because it acknowledges that they are part of the struggle. Gives them a place to stand. Everybody needs a place to stand. And so if you can embrace it, then come on. They know they're not black. But so what? They still have an experience of oppression. And if they feel that this is where they can work it out best, welcome. That's what I say. So anyway, I hope that answered your question. Any other questions, Paul?
Not knowing anything about the what I might ask, I've always thought that Union was progressive and open as a theological school, and so I'm not surprised that you're studying there. Are other, do you know anything about other seminaries throughout the country open to this really kind of new way of reading and studying and thinking? Is it making inroads into the traditionally, into the traditional seminaries?
Yes, it is, some, but not necessarily womanist theology by itself. But the interdenominational theological center in Atlanta, Georgia, is one where Jacqueline Grant works. Renita Weems, who is an Old Testament scholar, is at Vanderbilt University in Nashville, Tennessee. And so she does her writing from a womanist perspective, and so she's able to reach the few African-American women who are in the community. See, she may not be able to meet them in Vanderbilt, but she's able to do biblical studies among a white audience from an African-American woman's perspective, and that in itself is good. And then when she wants to be more immersed in the black community, of course, she can be part of the black church. So it's happening there. Episcopal Divinity School in Massachusetts, I forget. It's near Boston, but I don't think it's in Boston. Where is it?
Cambridge.
Yeah, Cambridge. That's where Katie Cannon was for several years. And so that school was very open and welcoming to the womanist perspective. And she is now at Temple University in Philadelphia. And so there's New York Theological Seminary in New York that's very open. And Fordham University is beginning to open the doors because they have a black theologian working there who is in solidarity with the womanist movement. So he does black theology from a more holistic perspective than Cone did initially. So it is getting around. However, it has not been heard of in so many schools that it's pitiful. Not only has womanist theology not been heard of, but no black women are teaching in these seminaries. So it's just a very small scattering of universities who are really trying to recruit black women. Colgate Rochester in Rochester, New York is another school where, you know, they are trying to open the doors and have a black women's presence. So the key is to try to interest as many African-American women as we can in being involved in womanist theology, not necessarily doing theology, but the perspective, so that whatever they do, wherever they do it, they'll do it from a womanist perspective. Other questions?
I'm still unclear on the differences between feminist and womanist. I've got my definition from womanist here, and looking through my notes, I don't have it down for feminist.
Okay.
Need something simple and concrete.
Yeah,
to see the differences.
And see if I can do that for you. Alice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, feminist theology, if you remember from yesterday, talks about ending sexist oppression. So that's just one dimension mm-hmm. of African American women's oppression. Because we're not only oppressed because we are women. We are also oppressed because we are black. We are oppressed because we are poor. And as Dolores Williams points out, black women have been surrogates in this country and are unique in that experience. You know, the others, you can find that oppression among all women except white women, perhaps, in the United States. And the world. But the surrogacy, Williams claims, that is common only to black women. So in other words, you have to have black women are saying that you can't just be fighting to end sexist oppression, which is what white women were doing in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Because as the woman said from group eight, that doesn't fit me. See, I'm not just a woman and a white woman with privilege in terms of my color. I'm a black woman, and I'm poor. So when we construct our theories, we have to have a wide enough range covering the oppression of the individual. So that's the a basic difference for you. And of course there are other shades of difference, as I mentioned earlier, when it comes to the experience itself. But that's, you know, to keep it simple, hopefully that would clarify it for you. Other questions? Somebody give me the time, please.
25 after.
25 after. Yes. Rob, right?
Hi. Getting back to Carla's question about Islamic, black Islamic women, what do they appeal to from their own theological or religious tradition that would justify a womanist perspective. My reading of the Islamic tradition is that it is profoundly anti-female. They do not have a Jesus to appeal to, as I take it from your perspective, you do as a Christian.
Yes.
Do they have anything that they call out of their religious heritage to anchor their womanist perspective on more than just their experience as black women?
I don't know that they are claiming a figure, you know, like one of the prophets yet. But what I do know is that they are trying to embrace the part of the concept that would help them to liberate themselves from the sexist oppression within the Islamic tradition. Because as you said, it has been very anti-female, and these women are, a few of them. Because, see, you know, in the, if you notice in the definition of womanist, and some womanists will disagree with me, but there is no mention of Jesus Christ. There is mention of the Spirit. The Spirit is all-inclusive. The Spirit is operative in every religious community. And so I see the Spirit as being operative in the Islamic community also, although it may not be named, you know, the Spirit. Maybe they'll bring Allah, you know, and translate that or make that correspond with the Spirit, since we say that God is Spirit. And so, but I would be interested, I'd be very interested to talk with some Islamic women to see what they would appeal to in their own traditions to help them to build or to contribute to womanist theology.
May I ask another question?
Yes.
I don't know how quite to ask this.
Just ask it.
One of the things that Alice Walker's writing, I think, has contributed, and she has taken, seems to me, a rather significant beating on this score, is the contribution, if one can say that, of the black male to the experience of the black female. I'm wondering if in womanist theology there is special attention given to the role of the black male within black community, the black family, and black church, if that is a dimension of the experience that the womanist can contribute that perhaps the feminist cannot.
I think that is made clear in our self-definition, but in case it isn't, we always make, you know, try to emphasize that the role of the womanist is not to divide, but to unite. And so we are always very conscious of the oppression that black males in our communities suffer. We refuse to divorce ourselves from our black males because we have sons and fathers and brothers and uncles and so forth whom we love and value. And so we don't want to have a separate movement from the men necessarily, you know, in the sense of our not being able to collaborate theologically. So I think that is what makes womanist theology appealing to so many people, is because you don't have to. It's been accused, feminist theology has been accused of being anti-male. Now that is true, has been true of certain feminist theologians, but it is not true of the movement in general. It's just not true. But that's what we've been accused of, being male bashers, wanting to be separatists and form our own cultures and that sort of thing, just to be separated from males. And feminists have been depicted as being primarily a movement of lesbian women who were just trying to promote their own agenda and so forth and so on. We as feminists and womanists have been accused of just wanting to have our own program. But see, the thing is, that's what you're gonna get back when you confront somebody, when you confront a male about his sexist attitudes. So we try to work with them as much as we can, those who are sensitive. And theologians like James Cone and Diotis Roberts and some of the others have taken a look at their earlier theologies, and they have appreciated the contributions and even the critique by African-American women and rethought that and repented and are now struggling with, trying to help us, you know? So we really want to have a theology that embraces everybody, and although we understand that it starts from our particularity, but we can also see a universal element of it. Nobody can do theology for everybody, so that's what that's one of our objections to classical theology. Some people just stood and said, okay, we're going to do theology for the whole world, and left out all of the oppressed voices, you know, the whole women population, the whole third world population, all the African Americans in the United States, all the Hispanic and other minorities in the United States. How is that a theology for everybody when it's done from a patriarchal perspective and don't even take into consideration that the other people are even here? You know, so we know that we can't do theology for everybody, but we can do it with the global perspective and have other people's in mind. Yes?
Is there any way that the woman can help the black woman in Africa, the main lady that Alice Walker talks about in The Secret of Gold?
Well, African women and African American women are also doing some collaborative efforts in theology. And so there are many ways in which we affirm the work that African women theologians are doing. And we invite them, you know, to be part of the womanist movement if that's their choice. However, we understand that even though we are both black, that they still have a different experience than what we have. So we recognize the importance of them doing theology based on their experience in the country where they live. But there is that collaborative effort among African American women, white women, Hispanic women. We are trying to reach out to Native American women, although we don't have any Native American woman theologian yet. We work with the male Native American theologians, and in that way we learn what their theology is, and we are also introduced to Native American women and have a chance to dialogue with them. And we also do the same with Asian women. But all of these women, this is what I need to say very clearly. Even though there are many women who in this country who call themselves perhaps, who somebody has named women of color, not many women identify with black women because of what it means to be black and female in this society. I had one Asian woman tell me earlier this year that she didn't know what racism was until she came to the United States. I think she is from Korea. And she said when she came here, she found out that she had to almost be racist in order to survive. Now, that's something to think about. But she made that confession. And it's the same thing. Asian women, when we talk in our little small groups, you know, about womanist and feminist theology, they want to know, same thing like my pastor wanted to know, is why does there have to be a womanist theology?
My pastor wants to say it should all be Christian theology. Well, what the reason Cone said black theology is because white theology, he claimed, was not Christian because it excluded so many people. So black theology is a statement in itself saying that it's being done from a black perspective. And the same thing for womanist theology. But, you know, so you point out again and again and again that you can't be subsumed under feminist theology and still have your own voice necessarily. I mean, some women feel comfortable with that. That's fine for them. But give me my choice to do otherwise if that's what works better for me. And so it is not popular to be identified with white women, I mean with black women. And that's just a fact of life in this society. So anybody who is will suffer the consequences.